Now in their second season, Leadership of the Leaf, with more cigar knowledge and more leadership insights. Two great leaders smoking great cigars. Here's our host, Austin and Dice. Grab a drink and jump in with a cut and a light.
Hey, welcome everyone to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name is Dice.
My name is Austin.
All right, Austin, we have a wonderful show today. I have an interview lined up. And for our leadership portion, we're going to talk about some mentorship.
Mentorship. All right, I'm down with this. Let's dive right in. I'm too excited.
All right. Well, like I said, our cigar portion, we have an interview, and I have an interview set up with Drunk Chicken Cigar, Miss Desiree. But before we get Miss Desiree on, Austin, what are you smoking?
Yeah. I'm smoking a Drunk Chicken cigar just so I can sit there and smoke one with Miss Desiree.
Oh, and you're pairing it with?
I'm pairing it with an Oak Smoke Glenfiddich 12U.
You gotta be kidding me.
Nope.
All right. I'm gonna let you know. I'm smoking a DCO Drunk Chicken Original cigar, just like you, for Miss Desiree, so we can do it for this show. And I am drinking an old fashioned with orange, blood orange ice cube smoked with oak.
Yeah.
Of course, Hennessy, old-fashioned.
Hennessy, of course.
Hennessy, right? All right. Amen. Well, without further ado, we got the pleasantries out the way. All right. I'd like to introduce everyone to Miss Desiree from Drunk Chicken Cigars. How are you doing, ma'am?
I am great. How about you?
I'm good. And just for the record, are you smoking a cigar with us?
I am. I'm actually smoking the Drunk Chicken Cigar Original, the DCO. I'm smoking it in the Lancero size, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wonder how that's going to...
that.
Yeah. A little bit different flavor note. All right.
It's slightly different. Slight difference. But we have 6 different blends and 14 different sizes, so...
Okay.
All right. Well, tell us about Drunk Chicken Cigars. How did you guys, where did you guys come up with Drunk Chicken Cigars of all things?
Man, before you answer, I read some of it on your website in the about. I read some of it and I was floored. I love it. Now, after you tell your story, I'm going to tell you why I love it, because your grassroots of how you start, that's kind of how we started. So please share Drunk Chicken Cigars.
So I am like the most laid back person of all times. I'm serious about business. I always have my laptop everywhere I go, but the one thing that I'm serious about is relaxing. I never want to stress out and stroke out, so I'm always in the backyard. We have chickens, and we have ducks too. And we're out there smoking cigars. We have an outside bar, outside fire pit. And, you know, we grill out there. Our friends come out and smoking cigars, drinking whiskey. And we happen to be outside, and a bunch of friends are over. Chickens are free range. So it's starting to get dusk. And one of my girlfriends goes, "Oh my gosh, you should call this place a Drunk Chicken. Because look at your chickens, they all look drunk." We all just started laughing. And I was like, chickens doing what chickens do, starts to get dust, they're running back to their safe haven, which is to go roost and everything. But they trip all over each other, they're pushing each other out the way, they're like squawking at each other as they go. So they did look kind of drunk. And so the next day, I went out and found a plaque, and it's one of those customized things that says, "Welcome to the Drunk Chicken, where we smoke cigars, drink whiskey, and we're living the dream." And I put that up in our outside bar, so it became a running joke that, "What are you doing today?" "Oh, I'm hanging out at the Drunk Chicken. Come on by." "Hey, what are we doing at the Drunk Chicken this weekend?" So it was that became the name of hanging out in the backyard with friends. It's stuck. And then so fast forward, my fiance at the time, my husband now, and I used to go out, and we we used to go out and look for cigar lounges to smoke and everything when we traveled. And when we were traveling one time, we ran into a group of guys who roll cigars. They happened to have a shop, a cigar rolling shop. And the guy was like, hey, I can roll you anything you want. And they were real super cool guys. And so, and at that time, I was like in my education of cigars, wrapper, binder, fillers. I was so deep in it. I had this Excel spreadsheet with all the wrapper, binder, fillers. I had over 200 cigars that I smoked with. And I could, at that point, I had sorted and tell you the wrappers that I like, the binders that I like. It depends on how I sorted it. So I kind of knew at that time I love Habano wrappers. I love Nicaraguan fillers. So when he was telling me all the wrappers and binders and fillers, I'm like, okay, I want this and I want that. I want this. I kind of went nuts in there.
Love it.
So we went back to the hotel and we're smoking these fresh roll cigars. I'm like, oh my gosh, these are amazing cigars. So we went back the next day and he rolled us some more. And I said, well, what if I bought like 100 of these cigars? Can I get a better price? He said, yeah, I can get you a better price. And all these guys are Cuban born, every single right. one of them. Okay. So okay. he said, yeah, I can get you a better price. I said, okay. So I go home and I call him up and said, look, I don't want just one. I want more than one, and I don't know how many. So we just started working with him, and he actually never really charged me until closer to the end, where he was like, "Enough is enough." He was, and I never asked him not to charge me because at that point I was like, "Oh, well, you know what? I had no problem paying for the ones that you already sent me. Just tell me how much I owe you."
Right.
He was like, "No. I just want to know that you're going to buy them. Absolutely, I'm gonna buy them." By the time we were done working with him, which ended up about 8 or 9 months later, we ended up with 5 blends, and that ended up being our first 5 original cigars. Wow. The DCO, which we said was number 1, so we know how to reorder. The Mother Clucker was number 2. Fat Hand, Little Dream, Sweet Dreams.
I love the names.
Thank you. But at the time, it was just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's what's on the band. We weren't thinking about selling the cigars. We just wanted to buy cigars. My husband's smoking. I'm smoking. We're smoking 6 or 7 a day. So we weren't trying to sell them. We were just trying to buy cigars cheaper. So what we did was we bought 100 of each. So we had enough 500 cigars. And we had this a couple old dorm room refrigerators, and we yeah. stuck them in there as many as we could in the old dorm room refrigerator. Eventually, we had a basement, and underneath the steps, we enclosed that in, created a small space for a humidor, put a humidification in there, and so that became our. And we put some old shelves, the kids' toy room. From the IKEA shelves that they had.
Yeah.
I stuck them in there, put the cigars in there. We had a whole setup based on our 5, how we like to smoke.
There you go.
Yeah, the DCO was originally a Gordo, the number 1, because he likes Gordos. The number 2, which was Mother Clucker, was a Robusto. But we both love the peppery, spicy cedar with the red wine. The Fat Hen, which was the number 3, we love the, I loved it with beer, but it was just originally just a shorty torpedo because I wanted something at lunch break that wasn't too heavy, yeah.
that wasn't light. That's a cigar smoker there. That's one.
Yeah, and I had a little stressful job too, so I was like, I need to go outside so I can keep this job. I'm going to go in there and hurt nobody.
It's like answering email before you have your coffee, yeah, no?
Yes. Really? I need a lunch break. So then the number 4 was Living a Dream. It was just so smooth and so nice that we were just like, yeah, it pairs well with just about anything. We went from that, and Sweet Dreams, and we had to kind of be talked into the Sweet Dreams one a little bit. He's like, oh, you should do this with a sweet tip. I'm like, oh, I don't like sweet cigars.
Yeah, sweet tip.
He was like, and I had the blend already with the Connecticut, with Nicaraguan, and I was like, okay, I like this, but it was too much like the Living the Dream, but I was like, something about it. He said, well, I'm gonna send you one with a sweet tip. I was like, I don't like sweet cigars. So he sent it. I was like, oh, I like this sweet cigar. Oh, yeah. This is good. So it had cocoa, vanilla. It paired well with my coffee. It wasn't overwhelming. And then I'm somewhat of a foodie, meaning that I like the naturalness of stuff. So I was so afraid to smoking chemicals. I'm just like, I don't want to smoke. I just want to smoke the tobacco, the leaves. I don't want to smoke all the chemicals. And he was like, no, it's just a sweet tip. Just sugar, cocoa, you know, sugar water. It reacts with the leaves. So he had to kind of give me an education on that to get me to really smoke it. And once I actually researched it, learned a little bit more, went and saw them do it a few times, I was like, okay, I can do this. So we kept Sweet Dreams in there. And that was originally a Lancero. So each one had its own purpose. So when we started going out to cigar lounges, people were like, what are you smoking with this number one on there or number three on it?
Yeah.
So we go, it's our own cigar. You should have one. Remember, we have 500 of these cigars now. So we were like, you should have one. So we started giving them to people when they asked. And we had so many people tell us that we should sell the cigars. These are great cigars, that we started researching it. Went to my local lounge and was like, hey, would you smoke this cigar? And I think I gave him the mother clucker at the time. He was like, yeah, if you're not going to sell it, I want it. Give me the manufacturer. I was like, no. Let me do some more research. And I did. I went to a lounge in Alabama that I've never been to, didn't know anybody there. And they were super sweet. And I gave them, I think, the Fat Hand and the Living the Dream. And they were like, yeah, well, what's the name? I was like, well, I don't have a name yet. Come back with the name. And then he told me, these labels won't work with the number one, two, three. People, you know, buy with their eyes. So when you get a name, you know, you have to have a catchy label and everything to go along with it, with the story. And so we went on our journey trying to figure all that out.
Nice. That's so awesome. I love it.
I will tell you, I'm glad he was able to talk you into the sweet tip. I'm only talking from experience. A lot of the newbies are scared of a regular cigar, right? So a lot of the newer guys and newer girls or whoever smoking, they like the sweet tip. That's why a lot of times new people start with the acid or something like that, because it actually has a taste that they can like. So I'm glad you put that in the portfolio. I'm glad it was able to convince, because it now, for 100% for sure, you have something for everyone.
Yes, and not only that, that sweet tip and the DCO, those are my number one sellers.
Oh,
both spectrums are my number one sellers.
That's interesting. I would have thought that like a Mother Clucker or something like that would have been a little bit more of a heavy hitter versus a sweet tip.
Sweet tip outsells everybody all day long.
Wow!
Look at that. I go to events and if I'm bringing five boxes of everything, I'm bringing 10 of the Sweet Dreams.
Oh,
wow.
There's a cigar you have that I saw on the website, and you absolutely, I have to go out and get this cigar. Homicidal Hen.
So that's a sick cigar. We actually created that cigar based on feedback from our customers. Your cigar, you keep on saying it's a full body cigar, but it's not. People confuse full body with flavor and strength, and they're saying, it's not full body enough, but they mean stronger. They want it stronger. So I went and created that one, and as soon as I created that one, it was almost an instant hit. It's a limited edition. I only make it once a year, 250 boxes. I started off at 200. We're at 250, and this year we'll probably go up to 300 boxes, and I sell out every year. And I hate saying this, but I always creep in another 50, and no one knows it. Just because throughout the year, people go, do you have any of those? Do you have any of those left? Yeah, I do. So it's going to go up to 300, because at PCA, I almost sell out all of them in that one show. Mm.
Wow.
Austin, just to let you know, in the description, it says it pairs well with cognac.
Oh.
Of course.
That's why you would go for that.
That's why you would go for that.
Yeah.
So it's smooth, but it's strong. It's strong.
Hey, I'm not afraid of it. I come out. Guys, I'm gonna be in Vegas here in a couple months. We'll have to go out and go get it.
Oh, 100%. We're gonna try the Triple Crown.
Yes, I will be doing a cutting light at Triple Crown, March 26th, during PCA. I'll be doing a cutting light.
Okay, I will definitely show up for this one. I missed your last one. You recently had one. I apologize. I was too busy, but I'm gonna make time for it. Oh, you wasn't there?
I wasn't there. I had an
Representation was there. That's yes. I want to meet everyone. Meet them all.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, I would definitely be there at the next one. So actually, most of the crew will be there at the next one.
Okay. You kind of shared a lot on that in that story, because one of our next questions is going to be, what do you look for in a cigar? What would be, you say, your go-to cigar?
Well, I'm more of a medium person on average, but I smoke everything, really except for sweet cigars. Now, I will try sweet tips, but it's not because of the sweetness. A lot of it is because of, I'm just like, I don't want to smoke the chemicals, the pipe tobacco that they put in it, or, you know, or however they infused it. I'm just a little bit of a purist from that aspect. Yep. Right. I like, when I go out to a lounge, and I've been on a lounge tour for the last 3 days, hitting about 6 or 7 lounges a day, I look for, I can't remember all the names anymore, so I look for the bands now. So any band that I feel like I have not smoked, I'm going for it.
There you go.
I'm attracted to it. So I'm one of those people, I want to try it. I get a lot of great cigars. I get a lot of trash, but I have fun trying.
Yeah. Austin, you're a band guy.
I do. I shop 100% with my eyes. That's what draws me to cigars. I actually looked over Leaf by Oscar several times because I thought the band was not flashy enough. So I look at all the cigars. Unfortunately, all my brick and mortars here have not had Drunk Chicken. So, but when Dice, kind enough, thank you, Dice, to mail this one to me, as soon as I saw the band, I was like, that is dope. I love this band. It's so awesome. I love the purple and the little egg, the chicken sitting in it. It made me laugh. As soon as I saw it, I was like, I would definitely pick this up in a lounge. Just based off the band, I'm like, ha, that's awesome. I got to get it.
Where are you located?
I'm about 30 minutes outside of St. Louis on the Illinois side.
Okay, yeah. But when PCA goes out to Louisiana next year, I will start to push it a little bit more out in that area.
Okay, yeah.
I'll hook him up whenever he wants, whenever he needs. I got a spot.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I have a spot too. www.drunkchickenscigars.com.
That's what I'll talk about. Yeah, drop that.
Not only that, if you use the code Stay Safe, you remember when we had the COVID, you couldn't go out to lounges? I would say Stay Safe, and use the code Stay Safe, and you get free shipping.
Ooh, okay.
Well, I don't have to remember that one.
Stay Safe.
It's on air, so you got it all the time.
All day. So, all right, so you go for cigars that you haven't had. So then, what has, you said you've been on the cigar lounge tour. What would be your favorite cigar smoking experience that you've had throughout this entire journey?
Oh, wow. It's not a lounge aspect of it. It is the people aspect of it. It's the meeting the people, meeting the lounge owners. Everyone's super dope, super sweet. I love the differences in the lounges. That's what I kind of, when I go there, I go, oh my gosh, look at their humidor. I just left didn't have boxes, and they had glass going across the front of their humidor. They had shelves with glass and little things, little cards, notes to tell you what they were. It's like, oh my gosh, that's so neat and different. And I went to another lounge, and their humidor was like, you walk into the door and the humidor is in, you know, you instantly from outside into the store. The whole store is a humidor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's just the little things that I see in each one of the lounges. One had a full TV. The wall was a whole TV. went to an outdoor lounge that was totally outdoors, but oh my gosh, it was so nice. I had a food truck in the back, and the food was amazing, and the music was so nice. And so just all those touches that bring out the owner's personality is what I love about cigar lounges.
Nice.
All right, this is one of my favorite questions to ask. You've been to TPE, PCA, and all these, and you've been lounge hopping. So the cigar industry, the face of the cigar industry is definitely changing. It's definitely changing from the old white crusty guy that's like a little overweight holding a cigar in his mouth. The cigar industry is changing. Do you feel it's changing in a positive light? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's trying to change in a positive light. They're trying to be more accepting of women and minorities. It's harder from my perspective coming in from the ground up, trying to break in when everybody is generations and generations been doing this, and they've gotten it from their grandfathers and grandmothers and or husbands and or fathers, and so it's just hard, you know, starting from the ground up. I feel welcome, and everyone says, hey, I'll help you, just, you know, let me know if you need any advice and things of that nature. It's just when you're starting off, you go, I don't want to bother people, like that. But people have been super sweet, and I think they're trying. It's just trying to figure out how to get to the next level is getting harder and harder.
That's fair, yeah. I would say, I don't know if you've seen this, but I've definitely seen it at a lot of lounges. There's been a lot more women and even more minorities than I used to see in various other locations. I've smoked down in Florida and Alabama. I smoked up here. I smoked out in Vegas. And I think I've kind of seen it over the years, just kind of tried to transition a little bit more to where it's maybe not so much old crusty guys that are just sitting in there after they got done with the golf course. It's now, you know, more middle-aged and a little bit younger crowd and everybody else in there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, that's what I see when I go to the lounges. And like I said, people are just very sweet and warm, welcoming. Even the newbies that come in, they're very helpful to everybody. So I'm just looking forward to I feel like I'm in the craft beer era where, you know, everybody was doing it in their garage, and eventually I'm going to break through that ceiling and make it to the next level.
Well, that's perfect, because I can already see that you are already making headway in that direction. I do remember talking to you at TPE, and I mentioned how there was some cigar company, there was another cigar podcast that was like, didn't quite understand. And I could tell you're passionate about this project. So when I told you that, you was a little upset with me. I can tell you was upset, but I was just sharing the news. And you said, you know what, come by my booth. Come by my booth and talk to me. So I came by your booth and I did talk to you. You gave me a cigar. I enjoyed it. I wanted you on the podcast. I'm glad we finally got some time together to do this. But you had to start from the ground up. So what advice would you give to someone that's trying to start from the ground up?
Well, before I get to that question, I want to apologize, because when you catch me in those trade shows like that, I'm so overwhelmed and moving all the time. And I do get a little hangry.
We get it.
Yeah, I don't really. I'm always moving. I'm not eating. I'm trying to get things together. When we're on the floor, it's just, I don't even go take a bathroom break half the time. I'm on the floor. So yeah, I sometimes do find myself a little cranky, and I need to kind of check myself on that. So my apologies.
No, we are always all good. Always. My feelings will not hurt at all.
So what was the question again? I'm sorry.
You started from the ground up. I know you started from the ground up, right? So what advice would you, like, let's say Austin and I want a leadership of the Leaf cigar. What advice would you give someone starting out in this business?
Don't do it.
Don't do it. I've heard that.
It's everyone looks at it and go, oh, you're partying all the time. You're having so much fun. I am not.
Now that's
not.
Work, baby.
It is hard work all day, every day. 9 o'clock at night doing a podcast with you. Yes, I'm smoking. I'm chilling. But it's still work. You have to. I am trying to get a little bit more organized because I overbook myself. Totally overbook myself.
Yeah.
I'm constantly going. And like when we were just talking a few minutes ago, my guys were like, hey, where's the podcast? Then all of a sudden they started talking about work, you know, what we're doing and sales and stuff like that. So when I get off here, I'm gonna have to go through and see, like, were there any questions, were there any concerns and stuff like that. 12 o'clock at night, somebody in California at 10 o'clock could be calling me, you know, doing the order. And so as soon as I wake up, I'm checking my emails and going through the website. I have two websites. I have a wholesale website and a retail website. Both of them crashed last week.
Oh, no.
Yes, and somebody actually had to email me, tell me, I saw your newsletter and I wanted to place an order, but something's going wrong. What? So I had to go figure that out, and it didn't take long, but I'm the marketing person, although I do have a marketing person now who's wonderful, but I'm the marketing person, I'm the salesperson, I'm the webmaster, I'm the secretary, I'm the phone.
You're the face of the cigar company. You're the person I met. You're who everyone wants to talk to. I want to talk to Dr. Rick.
So it gets to be a lot. It's all day, every day. There's nonstop. My dad, who has dementia, he says to me, half the time he doesn't know if he's coming or going, but he says, you need to slow down before you have a stroke. Mm. Okay, you can see that. He can't remember anything else.
bless him.
Yes, but that's kind of where it is. So, okay. Advice, what I would tell you is get a great team behind you, people that you can trust, and just when you feel like giving up, don't. That's when you have made a little headway. So just keep push through that feeling and keep moving forward.
I like it. Two steps forward, one step backwards. We'll still get you there. It just takes a little bit longer.
Yes.
All right, go ahead, Austin. Look at you.
Hey, every now and then, you know, it's a bit of wisdom just sprinkled in. So we talked a little bit before about what pairs the best with all your cigars. So how do you approach pairing with a cigar? Is there a method to your madness, or do you just go, I feel like having a Blue Moon, and I got a Mother Clucker, and that's what I'm going with? Or is there a little bit more thought behind it?
So it just really depends. So if I'm eating and then I'm gonna have a cigar later, I might go, okay, this is what I want to drink. But I tell people to smoke and drink what you like, and don't let people tell you, oh, well, that doesn't pair well. That's bullshit.
No, I mean.
Yeah, that's bullshit. You're an individual. My palate is not like your palate. And you need to, because this is what I say, I pair my Mother Cluckers with red wine does not mean that it can't go with a bottle of water too. So whatever you feel like you are in the mood for, that's what you need to do. Follow your heart in that direction.
That's perfect. So that leads to this question to Desiree. What is your perfect pairing? What is your pairing? Like, this is it. I'm going to chill, relax. There's no work. There's no anything. I got to do a perfect pairing. What are you smoking and what are you drinking?
A Drunk Chicken cigar with whatever I have in my cabinet.
Whatever's an arm reach, huh?
I'm also when I go places, not only do I look for unique cigars, I look for unique bottles of alcohol. If there's a bottle that's shaped different, I don't care if it's gin, whiskey, bourbon, whatever. If it's unusual, I'm gonna buy it, put it on my shelf. So I have a real unique collection of alcohol, and I will pull out something and go, okay, this is what we have in the day. And let's see how that works. Now I have put down a cigar because I was like, okay, this really overpowers what I'm drinking and I really want to get the drink. And so if I feel like my cigar is overpowering my drink and I really am want to have more of my drink, I will go with the Living the Drink, because it's kind of real smooth, real light. But if I'm like really digging my cigar, then I might have changed my drink, you know?
Yeah,
that's fair.
We both had that where we've had a drink and I'm like, this drink's really good, but the cigar, I can't taste for anything. I'm tasting smoke. That's it. Like, I don't get any flavor notes off of it.
Yeah.
Or vice versa, I've had a real strong cigar and I'm like, am I drinking water? Nope, this is whiskey. All right.
Yeah. You really have to, you know, for me, it's just a balance, and I'll grab whatever at the time, but sometimes I may have to make adjustments, and it's just, that's what it is.
Fair.
But a drink and a cigar, that's my perfect pairing.
Okay.
That works. Like,
since we're all sitting here smoking, having a drink, and enjoying all the good company, what do you see as the future for Drunk Chicken? Do you think you're gonna try to go nationwide? You're gonna try to, you know, what's the plan?
I'm already nationwide. What you talking about?
That's true.
What you talking about?
That's true.
That's true.
Yes, I'm already in over 400 lounges right now, and I'm in 5 countries.
Wow. Oh, yes. Okay. So
my goal is to make sure that the big guys, those top three, they feel me coming.
I like it.
All right.
I like it. All right. I'm not mad at that. You know, I'll be honest. When Dice was like, "Hey, we're gonna have an interview with Drunk Chicken," I was like, "But who?" He's like, "Drunk Chicken." I had to go do research. I was like, "I've never seen him or anything, so I want to know. I want to spread the word."
Yeah. No, I had to share it with him. I had to tell him. I was like, "No, it's something, man. You need to do your homework, and then I'm gonna get one and send it to you. And then we'll do this episode." And is Miss Desiree?
Like, yeah. I like it.
I was in the Humo Latino magazine, and it was in all Spanish. And I was like, can somebody translate? Because I don't speak Spanish. But this is such an honor.
Take pictures with Google Translate.
Yes. They gave me a whole 10-page spread, and wow, I couldn't read one word of it.
You still have that magazine?
I do. I did have somebody sit down and translate it, and then about a month later, they sent me an English version of it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing.
That is amazing. That's good. That's good. Well, I promise you this, that I will share the word. Anybody ever mention anything, I'm like, you should try one of these. If you're just starting out, you should do whatever. We're near the end of this, and Ms. Desiree, being who you are, I am so impressed. I have a question for you of what would be a great or a good or a perfect leadership quote from Desiree herself.
All right, so I believe in team. Together, everyone, together, everything is achievable and manageable. I mean, I really tell you when you cannot build a business by yourself. I mean, even Bill Gates has a team. Everybody has a team behind them, and it's achievable when you have great people doing great things and trust your team. in business every day, I see people hiring people and then micromanaging and telling them how to do their job. Well, you hired that person for a reason, because their resume said they can do it. Well, let them do it.
Speaking my language.
Yeah. Yes. So, and sometimes I have to take my own advice. So, but yeah, I don't know if you know this, but I do have a PhD in leadership.
Oh, do you really?
I do.
Oh,
yeah.
We might have to have you come back on for a leadership episode.
Yeah, yeah. I love leadership. That is my jam.
Oh, that's what our whole podcast is about. That's how we started. That's why when you was talking about all your friends get together and y'all smoke cigars, and then it kind of naturally progressed to you doing your own cigars, to progress to you selling the cigars and everything. That's pretty much what we did. We naturally got together, we smoked the cigars, we talked leadership. Our natural progression was, let's do a leadership podcast. But we like cigars too, so let's do cigars too.
Yeah, I mean, that is, if you're doing what you like and love, it's not work. You know, it's really an enjoyment of people hanging together. I said, my whole team wants to come on, but they all said, I haven't had Skype in years.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... yeah. I can't do without the team. I mean, but and a lot of leaders don't get that. They come out, and I actually hired this lady. I used to work for the Coast Guard, and I was one of the hiring officials, and I hired her. And she was great with everybody when she was, you know, a worker and everything. And I loved her. Everybody loved her. She was just like the staple there. And as soon as she became the leader, she began screaming and yelling. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had to bring her in my office and say, what are you doing? I said, how you were before is how you should be now. Everyone loves you. They'll follow you and do anything. You are the leader. You don't have to yell to be the leader. You don't have to cuss to be the leader. You are the leader. And people will respect you from when you respect them. And you were doing that before. You were here for years. So she never took my advice. And she ended up retiring early. But that's one of the things I see when people become the leaders, the supervisors, boss, whatever you want to call them, they lose their damn mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's part of what we preach almost, I don't know, every episode.
At a minimum.
Yeah, you have to. People will do more for you when you respect what they do. They'll go out of their way. I told you I have a full-time person now, David, and his hours are really 8 to 4, 5:30, somewhere around there. David is always working. I'm like, David, stop answering my email. This is for you for tomorrow. Stop it. You know, I don't want you to feel like you're always working. He's like, no, I don't mind. I'm enjoying it. I'm like, okay, I just want you to know that is not my expectation. Just because I emailed you or text you something, it's just so I can get it off my head so that we can discuss it tomorrow, or you can look into it tomorrow. But people will do for you if you treat them with respect.
100%.
Yeah. Agreed.
So that was actually one of my dissertations, the collegial leadership style versus the military I do as I say style, and how did people feel about that. And it was overwhelming that collegial leadership style is what people want and prefer.
Yeah, they prefer the transformational leader. You know, that somebody respects them, somebody actually values their opinion versus the person that just screams at them and says, do it my way or get out.
Yeah. Or the person that actually, okay, well, what do you need? Okay, let me hook you up with the resources you need to do your job effectively. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Ms. Desiree, that was enlightening. I mean, I enjoyed every aspect of that. The leadership portion is great. I definitely will reach out to you some other time in the future to see if we can get a leadership with you.
I love that.
Yeah. Austin, do you have any more questions?
No, everything. This was awesome. I loved it. I love the camaraderie, as always. It's always fun to have great people on, you know, on the podcast, and especially one that speaks leadership as fluently as you do.
Yeah, that was perfect.
As eloquently as you do. It's so much fun because you speak exactly our language, and everything that we preach on air is exactly what you said. It's just awesome to have to meet somebody like that. And I wish you all the best and all the success in the world with your cigar. I know you're going to do great things. I have no question about that. And we'll be definitely spreading the gospel of Drunk Chicken.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I just want to drop a little self-promotion here.
Please
check me out at drunkchickencigars.com. IG, Drunk Chicken Cigars. Facebook, Drunk Chicken Cigars. LinkedIn, Drunk Chicken Cigars. On Twitter, D Chicken Cigars, because they really took the whole thing. Yeah, Drunk Chicken Cigars. And if you want to become a retailer on both the host, the website, it gives you a link under About Us, how to become a retailer. We are doing our own distribution now, and we are rocking and rolling. We are ready for 2025 to come in, and we're coming in clucking.
There you go.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and we will definitely be keeping in touch.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this podcast, so I look forward to doing another one with you.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait.
All right, everyone. That was Desiree from Drunk Chicken Cigars. Dice, I know we got caught up in great conversation, and I forgot to ask, what was your second third like? We missed the first third. I'm not even going to ask.
Not even going to go about that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you could try to go back, but it was just, I know I was enthralled by the conversation.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed the Drunk Chicken story. My second third, I'm getting hints of espresso. The dark chocolate from before is turning into a little more of an espresso. And this, I want to say a slight like red pepper coming in with a tone of sweetness.
I don't know if I get the tone of sweetness. I agreed with you all the way up until the tone of sweetness. I definitely get the red pepper. There was a red peppery spice. A little bit of barnyard almost in there. It was good. It's definitely very good. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll start getting into 10 tips for a successful mentorship. And then we can talk about our final third as well.
All right. That sounds like a great plan. Right after this break. All right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. I'm just letting you know, if you want to see what kind of cigars that myself, Dice,
and Austin,
what we're smoking on each episode, check out our Instagram on Leadership of the Leaf. All one word.
At Leadership of the Leaf. And please leave us a comment. Send us a message with what other questions or what you guys are smoking on. Maybe you guys have some suggestions for us that we'd love to give it a shot.
At Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram.
Hey, it's Michelle from Cigars with M on the Leadership of the Leaf podcast with Dice and Austin.
All right, welcome back. That again, before the break, we had a wonderful conversation with Desiree from Drunk Chicken Cigars. I got to learn a little bit more about it. I talked about a little bit of the flavor profile, but let's just jump right in for 10 tips for a successful mentorship. You know, if you're lucky to have a mentor, you need to be proactive about nurturing that relationship. The best mentor relationships works for both you and your mentor. Mentor relationships are very helpful in your professional development as well as your personal development, which is why many companies and outside organizations invest heavily in offering these types of programs if they have something set up specifically for that.
Well, I equate it to like apprenticeship and everything. Like, you can't become a master craftsman if you don't start off from the bottom, your apprenticeship.
Right.
Even hair salons kind of do it. Real estate. Like, you got to hang your license somewhere. You can't just arbitrarily jump in the deep end. So the mentorship, a lot of times to me, when I think of it, it goes typically it's like the older, wiser guy that's been doing it for years. And then the young buck that comes in like, hey, I want to be just like you. And you're like, bro, I'll never be like me. And then like montage and then the friends.
Because it's a montage.
I put 10 tips, but I mean, they're not in any order or anything, but one is you want to establish clear expectations. Communicate your specific mentorship goals and expectations, which is kind of awkward if you just look at it for face value. Like, hey, Austin, I want you to mentor me, and this is what I want.
Well, yeah, but if you're coming into a master apprentice type thing, like, you know, tattooing, blacksmithing, stuff like that, you know, you kind of go up to somebody and say, hey, I want you to mentor me. I want you to teach me this craft. My goal is to be as good as you, if not better. I want to learn some tricks and techniques that you use that I would take could take years to find out on my own, but I want to learn those in like half the time or whatever the case is. You know, you kind of go about it that way. But if in a business setting, it's a little bit more, I don't want to say awkward, but for lack of a better term, it could be awkward to go up to, you know, the old hat in the sales department or the old hat in the accounting department and be like, hey, can you mentor me and teach me all this stuff? You just don't have to go about it so formally. You can just, hey, can you sit here and teach me some of the tricks that you use to make you so good at your job?
Yeah, I think it'd be a little awkward. You walk up and be like, hey, could you mentor me to be just like you? I agree with you. Like, hey, you're an old guy. Let me figure out some of the tricks of the trade.
Let me hold your pocket and figure out what you do.
Inquire about your mentor's objectives to ensure mutual alignment. So if I'm a plumber, I don't want to go to the carpenter. So you just want to kind of make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Right. Yeah, you need to create that a two-way relationship for effective communication and for both of your benefits in all reality.
Yeah, like if I know how to stack bricks already, I don't need you to continuously tell me how to stack the bricks. Tell me like a pattern that's more helpful or something like that. Like if I don't communicate what I'm looking for and if you don't communicate what you're giving, then we're both just, I don't know, hanging out?
Yeah, playing pinochle on the weekends?
Oh my gosh. Here goes with that pinochle.
Yeah. The second thing is, and it kind of sounds weird, but you want to confirm logistics. And then what we mean by that is discuss your preferred meeting formats, your frequency and communication methods. Maybe you're the type of person that needs to be shown something once, do it once with them looking over your shoulder and you got it. Or maybe you're the type of person that says, hey, I need you to break it down for me step by step by step. Write me a how-to guide, something like that.
Well, I know it can be a little awkward trying to set a time frame or, you know, a specific, like, hey, at 3 o'clock, we want to do this type situation. The best thing to do is, like, really kind of communicate your needs and desires so you can figure out an instant time frame. Or maybe you're more of a spur-of-the-moment kind of guy, and that works best for your mentor. Or maybe the guy doesn't even really know he's your mentor yet, and that's what you're trying to do is, hey, I don't want to keep bothering you, but what's a good time for me to stop in?
Yeah, even if it's just, hey, do you have, even if it's the end of the week or something, hey, boss, you got like 10 minutes at the end of the week or something, can we just go over my performance for the week, tell me where I could have got done better, tell me what I did good? You know, just kind of so I can help learn and make sure I'm doing something. And 9 times out of 10, your bosses are going to go, yeah, I think I could squeeze you in towards the end of the week. Or, hey, why don't we have lunch on Fridays? And we could talk business. We could talk shop. All right, yeah, that sure is. That sounds good. Boom. You just set up a meeting time and set it up. And now you can sit there and communicate. You need to be open to compromises. And use calendar reminders for scheduling. You know, again, if you have kind of a standing appointment, calendar reminders is meh. But if it's some weird time like 2:45 on a Tuesday, you might want to use calendar invites.
Well, yeah, the main thing about especially if there's a set time or something set up, you want to make sure you make it that time. You want to be a little early or actually on time. I wouldn't show up late. When you show up late for stuff like that, it really kind of sends the signal that you really don't care, or you don't respect that person's time, or you don't really give a fuck about what's going on. So if there's a time set up, you want to make sure you make it on time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of key. You know, whatever you got to do, put it in your phone. Just a reminder, hey, it's Friday at lunch. Remember, ask your boss to lunch or whatever, you know, whatever the case happens to be. And being punctual is absolutely critical in those types of situations, like we talked about. You got to make sure that you're not wasting your boss's time or the old head in the department's time, because then they're going to want to stop teaching you.
It's just a natural give and take of respect.
Yeah.
Like if you show that your sense of urgency and how bad you want it, then it shows that you are really willing to learn. You want this. It's not something that's being forced upon.
Yeah. Need to also articulate your needs during these meetings. So clearly define your mentoring session goals, whether encouragement, guidance, or ideas. Again, hey boss, wonder if I could pick your brain for, you know, 20, 30 minutes and you could tell me what I'm doing good, what I'm doing bad, any ideas on improvement, what you see that I need to work on, whatever the case is, boom, you have a session goal. Hey, I'd really like to just talk about what I did good during the week and what you think I could do better. Boom. Got it. Encouragement, guidance, go forth. You know, there you defined your mentoring session goals.
Well, during your articulating your needs, you want to adapt your needs as they evolve over the mentorship time. Meaning that if your whole goal is to build widget A and B, and you already are confident and skilled at widget B, then maybe, you know, hey, I appreciate your time right now. My widget B is on point. If you could give me some pointers for widget B, but what I really need to know is the inside scoop of widget A. I'm really struggling with widget A. Help me with some helpful tips or something I can do to help out with widget A, because I really need help in that direction. Because over time, it's going to evolve. Like, okay, I think this guy is good at A, B, and C. I'm struggling with A. I need to articulate my needs. Like, I need to know A, but my mentors keep talking about C and B. I'm good. Let's. Yeah. But if you don't communicate those needs, then how the hell is he really going to know?
Right. And then once you get widget A down, you need to adapt your needs as they evolve over the course of the mentorship. Mentorship comes in stages, right? So, you know, it's kind of like team building. You have the forming, storming, norming, and performing. And then, you leave or whatever. It's the same thing. The mentorship could take years. You can have a mentorship session that both of you are years and years and years of great learning and everything else. You're not going to continue to need help with widget A all over those years. Maybe you got A, B, and C. Now you need to know, take a step back and look at the supply chain management. Now you need to know the logistics. Now you need to know the marketing, the sales, the whatever the case is, how to run. So you can step up and take that mentor's spot one day.
Well, yeah, because it definitely broadens your horizons of your IQ level of whatever the task at hand is. I mean, just look at cigars. I mean, when I first started, I was just, oh, look, I'm smoking a cigar. I didn't know anything about a wrapper. I didn't know anything about binder.
Right.
What do you mean, long filler? What are you talking about?
Short filler, what?
So over the years, it evolves over time. And my mentors was normally the old guys in the back of the tobacco shops. Let me show you something, Junior.
Right. And you can't be afraid of blunt, explicit communication. Sometimes that's what you need. Other times it's not. It's maybe not what you need, but you got to be willing to just listen to your mentor. That's why you chose them to be your mentor. If they tell you, don't do this, you're fucking shit up, then you're probably fucking shit up.
I mean, when it comes to it, you can't be a baby back bitch about it, because in the grand scheme of things, let's be honest, you kind of ask for that. Mentors don't normally seek out someone and be like, hey, you, I'm going to be your mentor. you're going to listen to me. That doesn't really, it's a normal transgression of just getting together. It kind of like falls into place. I know you see it in like the old cop movies and stuff, the older, I'm about to retire, and then the younger cop comes in. It's a natural transgression. So if you are seeking mentorship from someone and you know, they're gruff and they tell you like it is, you got to kind of remember, you asked for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you asked for this. So you know, you can't sit there and whine and be like, they're mean when they talk to me. Well, you asked for it.
Maybe sometimes, you're not ready for that mentorship. Maybe you need to find someone that's a little more soft spoken, I guess. I don't know.
All right. Yeah. So if you ask for that mentorship, you can't be upset about it. But what you can do is take some initiative in scheduling. Woo.
Yeah.
That was a mouthful.
A lot of whiskey, I see.
Not enough, apparently. like we talked about it earlier, right? You got to set regular meeting days or schedule, you know, meetings as required. You know, hey, I noticed that, and I've done this with you. You were my mentor when I was coming up in the industry. You know, when we were working together, there was one time I remember it was towards the end of the year. It was like this November, December timeframe, and I had made a bunch of mistakes, just stupid, idiotic mistakes that there's no reason for me to make that I knew better. And I had to come to you and I was like, hey man, I'm sorry. I don't know what the hell's going on with me. I'm fucked up. I know what I'm doing wrong. I just, for whatever reason, my mind's not in it right now. And you said something to me that was kind of stuck with me. You're like, listen, man, it's okay. It's the end of the year. It's near the holidays. Everybody starts making mistakes around this time. You just got to be aware of it. You know, your mind's on, you know, the trip that you're going to take to go see your family or the girlfriend or the whatever, or the wife or whatever. It happens. Just be aware of it and try to do better and keep your mind in the game. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll do it. And it took that to, you know, getting into that, hey, I, you know, it was not a meeting or a mentorship session. It was just one of those things where I was like, hey man, I've fucked up so many times this week and I'm sorry. And you're like, it's cool.
It happens. Where are we at? Take initiative in the scheduling. So
yeah,
that's what she was talking about. So sometimes it's an impromptu. Sometimes you can try to set regular meetings, days, and schedule meetings as required, but sometimes that just doesn't work out. I mean, I know for my mentors that's coming up, it's just not something I set in stone. Be like, hey, so-and-so, can we meet now? Or let's schedule in Monday at 3. So impromptus and just go-bys or even at the smoke pit or whatever. Sometimes that's the best sessions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, your boss says, hey, let's talk this over lunch. And you go, hey, boss, lunch really doesn't work for me. I take that lunch, I go smoke a cigar, I sit in my car, I decompress, I do whatever. And sometimes, you know, you got to discuss those scheduling preferences with your mentor. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, you got to work, you got to compromise and make it all happen.
Well, it's one of those things, you be responsive and maintain effective communication. So if lunch isn't going to work for you, maybe you should make time for this. If this is what you want, you should make time for this. So maybe lunch will not work for you. Maybe take a shorter lunch so you can come back earlier just to have that sit down session, just to engulf some of that wisdom that's going to be shared.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just because maybe you missed a week, that doesn't mean that they don't want to stop mentoring you or that you've fallen out of favor or whatever the case is. It's just maybe you both got busy and you just weren't able to link up that week. It happens. So, you know, you just got to sit there and try to maintain that communication, maintain that open line, and just try to learn from everything.
I remember there was a time where you wanted to meet up with something and I just didn't have the time for it. And it was pretty important. I can't remember exactly what it was for. It was pretty important. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. Let's just whatever I have on my plate, I put it to a side, and I think it was you and a few others, and we went out to have lunch together.
Yeah.
And man, that lunch, it really opened my eyes to a lot of things, because I knew you and I, we had this like thing going on, but there was two other people at the table. I didn't know they was paying attention to what was going on. I didn't know they was, you know, picking up what I was putting down. And some of the questions that was asked at that table, I was like, wow, okay. Well, here, let me share my insight. Let me tell you why I did that. Let me share the reasoning for these things. So sometimes, I mean, the mentorship goes both ways, like we said at the beginning. And that was really an eye-opener for me when I actually needed to pay attention to some of the things that I had going on, because other people was paying attention. I didn't realize that.
And that kind of goes to the next point of, you know, you got to respect your mentor's time. And conversely, the mentor needs to respect your time. You know, you got to sit there and, you know, we talked about punctuality in meetings and make sure you respond to everything else. But you need to make sure you show that effort and respect their time. If you just go in there and you're like, all right, boss, teach me something, they're going to go, what? No, you asked me to sit down with you. What the fuck do you want to talk about? Well, yeah, I don't know. I just figured you'd teach me something. Yeah, what do you want me to fucking teach you?
Right. Like, I need more. You need more. You want context. Me to teach you what? Right. Teach you what?
You want me to teach you how to do a handshake? We can teach you how to do a handshake. What the fuck you want?
Yeah, there you go. Shake hands. Now fuck off.
Yeah. You gotta show up. You gotta be kind of semi prepared. What are you gonna ask of that mentor? What are you coming to the table with? You know, what are you saying? Hey, we've been at this for a while now. I think that I have grown in this area by doing X, Y, and Z. What do you see? Do you see that, or do I need to try harder? You know, you kind of showcase that project or the progress or those actions to highlight. Hey, you are making an impact, and this is how I've tried to make show you that you made an impact. Are you seeing it, or am I still missing the mark?
Yeah, that's a perfect to make sure that the mentorship is actually working, because you're respecting each other's time, right? So if you come to me, or if you come to a mentor, and whatever you A, B, and C, and you're like way off. Like something's not jiving here. Why are you talking about A, B, and C when I was talking about X, Y, and Z? This something's not right. So kind of like go back to the start, try again and start again and communicate better, whatever you're looking for. But if I hear that you're talking about X, Y, and Z, and I'm like, okay, let me emphasize a little more on the Z, because we missed something here, but I can see your progress.
Right.
And that's something I tell a lot of people in training, because a lot of new guys, whatever, when they're learning a new task and widget building or anything like that, they get a little disheartened with themselves because it took them an hour to get something done and it only takes like 15 minutes. I don't want to dishearten them with that. Like, yeah, you should have got it done in 15 minutes. You kind of suck at life. You don't want to actually jump to that right away. Like, all right, you're learning, you're training. I get it. Next time you should be faster at it. Then the next time you should be even faster at it. Then the next time you should be able to talk yourself through it with no problem, with ease. And then sure as shit, you'll be done in 15, 20 minutes like a pro.
Right. And it does take time. So, you know, you have to be a little bit patient with yourself, because any good mentor is going to be patient with you as you're trying to learn and understand the procedures and stuff that the mentor is trying to teach you.
It makes me think of I'll probably show my age, Karate Kid.
Yeah.
With when he was talking about wax on, wax off. Everybody Daniel always makes Simon. Fun of that, right? Yeah, wax on, wax off. And then, you know, at some point, Daniel's like, this is bullshit. You got me doing chores. You doing all this shit. And then Mr. Miyagi had him showcase what he learned. He was like, Daniel, sand the floor. And then, you know, he'll do it. And then while he was doing it, Mr. Miyagi would throw punches and stuff at him. And then he was like, oh, shit, sanding the floor actually worked. Look at this shit.
Kind of goes back to respecting your mentor's time and respecting their methods. You may be learning more than you actually are aware, just because their methods are kind of, you know, unorthodox, to put it mildly. You're still learning stuff. I know there's certain times where I've sat down with people and they'll just be BSing. They won't even be talking to me, but I'm understanding what they're saying and I'm learning the entire time that they're talking. They don't even know that I'm listening.
Yeah, no, that's some of my favorite stuff, especially when a lot of old heads get together and they start. I know we just had an interview when the old heads get together and they start clucking.
Yeah,
so much wisdom is dropped in there that you're just paying attention. Yeah. Then normally after that session or whatever, whoever I'm like trying to get to know more or better about it, I was like, hey, when you guys were talking about this, what do you mean by that and this and then that? Then you can see the light bulb moment, like, oh, you was paying attention.
Yeah, yeah, of course I was. I'm sitting at the feet of the masters, and you guys just dropped all this wisdom on me. I'm trying to pick it up. That goes to the next point of avoid asking too much too soon. There's you got to have patience with your mentor or whoever, or the person you're mentoring even. You know, if you come in and let's say you do widgets A through Z and you're like, hey, show me QRS, TV, W, X, Y, and Z. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You ain't even mastered A yet. Let's start at the beginning. You're like, nah, man, I'm good with A. I want to do all this other stuff because that's the cool stuff. Like, I understand. But everything builds off of each other.
Yeah, a lot of the younger, I pick on the younger guys, but a lot of the younger guys, they want to know everything now. That I guess that's that generation because, well, back in my day, you had to look up information in an encyclopedia, right? But now everything's like on a phone.
Right.
Or at your fingertips. So if you want to know the answer
from Amazon.
Yeah, you want something, you can get it almost instantly. But the problem with that is knowledge and wisdom and how to actually do a task or something like that. You're not going to learn that instantly. You got to crawl before you walk. With a lot of things, you got to crawl before you walk. And a lot of the younger generation, they want all the information now. And when they go and ask for everything at one time, a true mentor, that's going to turn them off.
Yeah. Well, and even so, there's also the other flip side of that coin, right? They could be a pro at the processes. They could do everything perfect. And they're like, what do I need a mentor for? And then you just ask them, why you do it like that? Well, I don't know. That's how I was shown to do it. Yeah, but why? And they're like, I don't know. Like, do you know about this process and this and this and this? And then they realize that they have no idea why they're doing what they're doing. They're just doing what they're doing because they're monkey see, monkey do. I can build widgets all day. And next thing you know, that you built a mentorship session with them and you're like explaining the why or the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, that's some of my favorite things. Like, hey, what you doing there, buddy?
Building a widget.
Oh, that's cool. Did you know about this? What are you talking about? Aha! Mentor session.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of times where I'm like, why are you doing it that way? Well, that's just what I was told to do. Yeah, I understand what you were told to do, but why were you told to do it that way? I don't know. I was just told to do it this way, so I'm doing it this way. Got it.
It's like you're not learning the art behind it. You're just doing it.
Yeah, like I can, you know, even if I could recreate a beautiful symphony or a masterpiece, art masterpiece or something, you know, I don't feel the feelings that the composer or that the artist was putting into that piece. I just recreate. All right, cool, whatever. Until I learn maybe the history about this piece and what they were going through. And now I understand why this is played in this key or they use the color choices that they use or something like that, and it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So yeah, you gotta gradually progress from those simple to complex requests. You need to adjust engagement based on your mentor's readiness. You know, if you're a person that is just hungry for information and you're like, all right, cool, I got it down. I'm good to go. Let's move on to the next thing. And maybe your mentor's like, hey, I can't teach you the next thing right now. Focus on mastering widget A, and I'll teach you widget B when I have a chance next week. You're like, no, I could build widget A like 80% of the time. Teach me B right now. Look, man, get A to 100, and then we'll focus on B.
Yeah. That's where it goes to the flip side to the mentor, because the a mentor, being a mentor, which I'm hoping everyone will eventually at some point in time, when you become that mentor, you have to have patience. You got to be patient. I know I keep talking about generations, but especially with the newer generation and even the newer generation that's coming in, like even with my kid, you just got to have that patience, because not everything is going to be built right away. Not everything is going to be done exactly like they want every single time. So just be patient and help build those building blocks for the future.
Yeah, and there's a quote by he's now retired. He's a chief in the Air Force. He just retired, but his name's Chief Colon Lopez. Everyone calls him Chief CZ. But one of my favorite quotes by him is, I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes. People train to just get it right, but professionals train until they can't get it wrong.
Oh, I like that.
And I love it because it's like, boom. People will sit there and train. They're like, yeah, all right, I got it right. I'm good. I got A right, finally. Don't know if I can do it again, but I got A right. Now let me move on to B. No. Go back to A. Do it until you can't get it wrong.
Yeah. No, I like that.
It's one of my favorite quotes by him. I butchered it, I guarantee you, but
I got your point across.
Yeah, it's a great one.
When you finally get that mentorship, like you get that that team that when you finally get that mentorship connection together, you want to foster that personal connection. You want to allocate time in that mentorship meeting to know each other personally. Like you want to know, like, does he have a wife? Does he have kids? Like what's really going on? What's making that person tick? What makes your mentor tick? What makes the person being mentor tick? Like, what are the similarities maybe you have? Maybe there's not some similarities. How was that person raised? Did he go to school? What was his home life like?
Oh, amateurs train until they get it right. Professionals train until they cannot get it wrong. That's the quote. Sorry, that was going to bug me. Yeah, and the reason you want to know that sort of stuff, you want to know what's going on in their home life, you want to know what that person is like, it helps you understand where that person's coming from. You understand their perspective. You understand, why he's short with you at this point, but he's patient with you here. Or if you're mentoring somebody, maybe they don't understand, you know, your folksy wisdom because they came from the city and you need to try a different teaching method. Something along those lines. You know, you got to learn how everybody communicates, what they understand, what they don't understand. Because if you come in here and I start giving a bunch of car metaphors and the person's ever worked on a car in their life, they're just going to look at you like a deer in the headlights and go, what the fuck did you just say to me?
You got mud in your tires.
Huh?
Okay. You got mud in your tires.
Well, all right, I'll go to the car wash then. What are you trying to say about Witch Day?
Well, that was my cousin Vinny, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Or if the person doesn't know a sports metaphor, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, we got to get over the end zone. What the fuck is an end zone?
I had a boss one time. His motivational speeches and everything, they were actually very motivational and very great speeches, but he will often use boxing. Like, I'm in my sixth round and I'm dazed, but this guy wasn't going to go down. I'm like, dude, you amazing. I'm ready to go. You got me pumped up, but I don't know nothing about boxing, man.
Yeah. I don't know what you're trying to say to me. I don't understand the point.
I'm ready to go take him out now, though.
You want me to punch? You want me to punch Billy? What? Six rounds? I don't understand. So that personal connection is definitely very important. Just as important as keeping your mentor informed. need to notify your mentor if you have a career change or you're shifting priorities. Hey, thanks so much for teaching me about accounting, but I'm actually going into more marketing. What can you tell me about that? Or hey, you know, this is the accounting stuff is great, but I'm trying to learn finance now. I need to know what's the finance, and accounting and finance are very subtle different fields.
Yeah.
But they are different fields.
Correct.
So you gotta, hey, this is great that you're telling me all about how to build a car, but I'm trying to build a dune buggy and this is not the most helpful thing ever.
But you want to prioritize open and timely communication to adapt to the mentorship. Meaning that if you're changing your careers, you don't want to be like, oh, hey, by the way, Austin, I'm now going into accounting. I appreciate everything you taught me about marketing. I'm going to accounting. And then you walk out the door and you're gone forever.
Like, yeah.
Wait, what the fuck just happened?
Why did I just waste so much time, my time and energy teaching about accounting for you to go to marketing? What the fuck?
Is it something I said?
Yeah. Did I do something wrong? Did you not just like the field? Yeah, it's one of those things where you got to keep that open line of communication. Hey, you know, hey, I'm going to put you in for a promotion. Ooh, actually, don't put me in for a promotion, because if you promote me, that means I have to move to a different city or a branch. And I'm really not trying to do that right now. Me and my wife just bought a house. We got a great school system. I don't really want to be a promoter right now. I'm happy where I'm at. But thanks for thinking of me. I'd love to keep learning from you. And maybe 5-10 years down the road, think about this again.
Well, yeah, because you have to prepare for challenges.
Hey.
You got to seek solutions if you and your mentor have different focus or engagement levels. So mentor is like, I want you to elevate. I want you to be better than I. That's the whole point of this whole mentorship, right? But if you're not ready for that promotion because you don't want to change locations, or you're not quite ready for that jump in responsibility yet or anything like that, so you got to prepare for those type challenges.
Yeah, or even on the flip side of that is, I get what you're saying, but you're not going to be moving. I got everything. We're going to get you promoted. I understand you may be concerned about the increase in responsibilities and moving to a leadership position when you don't feel you're ready. Don't worry, I'm still going to be here, and I'll still help you out. I'm not going anywhere. You know, if you need to address unresponsiveness on the mentor or mentee aspect or mismatched needs, you need to do that proactively. Hey, I've been trying to reach you for like 3 weeks to teach me about widget B. I've got A down pat. Oh, yeah, I guess I should. I guess it's about time I teach you. Like, is there something going on? Do you not want to teach me? Because I can go to somebody else.
Yeah. That's one of those things where you got to reach out to like your mentors or whatever for guidance and have an honest conversation with the mentor to resolve these type of issues. Because if that's the way you're thinking or the way you feel, then maybe the mentor is feeling a certain kind of way. Maybe the mentee or whoever's being mentored feels a certain kind of way. There's got to, again, we keep you overusing it. There's got to be an open communication in that to seek what each of the parties want or desire.
And there can be over communication on the mentor side, you know, where they're trying to teach too much too quickly, and so the mentee just kind of shuts down and stops responding. Like, hey, did you get this? No. Like, I'm still trying to learn the first thing you were teaching me. Could you go back to that? Like, oh, what the fuck, man? I thought you already had that. No, you just assumed. Didn't talk to me.
That's where that patience comes in again.
Mm-hmm. And finally, you need to reciprocate and give back. Express willingness to assist your mentor and consider becoming a mentor to others. Pass on what you have learned. You can participate in mentorship programs, which often usually are like dying need for mentors. You know, once you've worked with a mentor and you've kind of done it, it's time for you to pass on what you've learned, right? We've talked about train your replacement. We've had a whole episode about that. So guess what? Your mentor is training you to be his replacement. guess what you should start doing? Training the next guy to be your replacement, and you can keep going. And then once you move into your mentor spot, you could continue training that guy to take your spot eventually, so you can move out and go bigger, better things.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, take this pebble from my hand. Oh shit, you did that. Okay, now it's your turn to turn around and be like, hey, you, take this pebble from my hand. Like, I can't. Oh, let me teach you something.
Yeah, let me show you the way.
Again, I guess that's showing my age again.
Yes. No? Yeah, 100%.
Oh, all right. Sorry. It's okay.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things where it takes a little bit of getting used to, but, you know, you've always said, and I 100% agree with, the best way to cement what you have learned is to go teach it to somebody else.
Absolutely. Because I look at it like when my kid first started playing video games, like, she absolutely hated it. But I was like, look, over time you'll get it, do this, you know, get a feel of the controller, then you can understand how the buttons work and everything. And by all means, she has far surpassed me in video games. But I mean, it took time. Right. I'm pretty sure she was not happy about it, and begrudgingly, like, she did whatever she had to do, and she found a game she actually liked. And now the roles are kind of reversed. She's actually kind of mentoring me, I mean, with the video type stuff. Like, she's teaching Pokemon. You play Pokemon? I'm not a Pokemon guy.
No, I have not.
Okay, well, she's teaching me about Pokemon. I know so many different little Pokemon, and I'm like, I got to catch them all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that came out when I was younger, and I never really got into it. But now my kid's into it, and I'm learning a lot.
Yeah. So look at that. You've been mentored by your kid, and you don't even know it.
Yeah. Well, normally it's me learning about it so I can then teach him about it.
I just remember when my kids started Mario, the very first Mario, like, how do you jump? What the hell is going on? What is this thing? Oh, it just killed me. I don't want to play this. This is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that? Well, I don't understand. What is going on? But yeah, and mentorship is, and you know, being a mentor or a mentee, it's a two-way street. You know, don't get so engrossed in your way of doing things that you fail to see that your mentee has maybe taken what you've given them, molded it to fit them, and brought out a brand new way of doing business that's better than you could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
Don't discount that just because you had to teach them how to do it. There, you know, new technologies coming out that maybe you weren't aware of, but your mentee is. So, you know, there's so many things that you can sit there and kind of go, all right, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. But then they show you, you're like, oh shit, that took a 20-minute job down to 5 minutes. Like, oh my gosh, I could save so much time with that.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a two-way street. You know, you sit there and you're like, maybe your mentee does some trial and error. They tried it your way. They don't like the way it doesn't work for them. And so they found their own way. And you go out there and you're like, why aren't you doing it my way? Well, I tried and it doesn't really work for me. But look at this cool other way I found. And you're like, oh, shit, that actually does work. That's dope.
Are you in your final third?
Yes. Yes, I'm in my final third. All right. I'm getting the pepper has died down, yeah. But it started to get a little, like, sweeter. I don't know if I would say, like, cocoa, maybe a honey or something.
Yeah, I got the sweetness, and I'm equating the sweetness to the actual, like, sweetness of the tobacco is actually coming out. I'm not sure of how they actually did it at the end, but. Yeah, the natural sweetness natural sweetness of the tobacco is actually coming out. Maybe it's a little honeyish on the tone. Sweetness throughout. I do. I rather enjoyed this cigar.
Yeah, it was good. It was very good. All right. Well, we had a wonderful conversation with Desiree from Drunk Chicken Cigars. Can't wait to have her back for a leadership aspect. She was so much fun to talk to. And then we got to lovely talking to about mentorship session, which, you know, she laid down some good points and probably mentored us both a little bit.
Yeah.
which is fun. We don't often get that with our guests, you know. It's, you know, they have their expertise in their area, but, you know, that was quite interesting to hear from her and get her take on some of the things.
I mean, I did enjoy the great conversation that we had with her. I'm looking forward to, I love the names of her cigars. Mother Clucker, come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Who would not want to, hey, what are you smoking? A Mother Clucker? Yes, please.
Sweet
give me
dream.
All the Mother Clucker. Give me all that. So, Austin, I'm asking right now. I know we had her on the show. I don't want you to try to show any favoritism. I know people are going to think that, but we're a show of integrity, goddammit. So I want to know, 1, 5-pack or Boxworthy?
I'm going to go with 5-pack.
You're going to go with 5-pack?
5-pack. The reason I say 5-pack is I only had one, so you know, my opinion may change if I was to have a second one and really be able to, you know, sit down, enjoy the cigar, and not be enthralled with the conversation. But I would say 5-pack because I just don't know, it may just not be my flavor profile, or I may just not have been paying enough attention to the cigar, but it just didn't strike me like, oh my God, I could smoke this every day and never get sick of it. It didn't strike it for me. I'm not saying it was a bad cigar. I think a 5-pack would do well in my humidor, and I could pick it up every once in a while and be perfectly happy with it.
You know what? I'm going to agree with you because I would love to have a 5-pack of this in my humidor. Because it'd be a great smoke to pick up. I wouldn't say box quite yet, same as you. The reason why I'm going to go 5-pack is slightly a little different because there's so many in her SKU. Not saying it's a negative thing, but there's so many out there that I want to try, different sizes.
Yeah.
She was smoking a Lancero. How
right.
interested are you in smoking a Lancero? Come on.
Yeah, no. I mean,
cigar? Yeah.
I'd be down to try it so much. So, yeah, and that's the other thing. Maybe I just didn't get the size for me.
Right. So I'm going to go 5-pack for now. I would love to get 5-pack of probably each of her cigars.
I think that'd be each size.
That's going to be a lot. She said, what, like 18 different ones?
Yeah, I don't fucking
18
know,
different sizes? That was a lot.
So
it'd be great to get one or two every now and again to sample to find out which one I want more. Go from 5-pack, and then I'm very confident once I find that combination that fits me.
Yeah,
I guarantee it'd be Boxworthy all day long.
Oh, 100%.
As of right now, I'm going to go 5-pack just so I can keep that variety going.
Yeah, no, and I agree. The take that you gave was spot on. I'm sure that, you know, we find a, you know, let's say we go to the Mother Clucker in the Robusto size, and we're like, this is it. This is what we like. You know, that's probably Boxworthy all day. This particular one just wasn't it for me.
It wasn't a Boxworthy, but it's definitely 5-pack.
Yeah,
definitely above singles. I would definitely go 5-pack.
Agreed.
All right, so we had a great show, great interview, great mentorship session. Until next time, I'm Dice
and I'm Austin, and remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.